Initiating Commander's Log Broadcast. Link up complete. Upload successful.
Hello everyone, my name's John Harper, and welcome to episode 10 of the Commander's Log podcast for their novel And Hear the Wheel. Got a few topics to talk about today, the first being the fact that I've finished this edit of the novel. I'll also be talking about the DDF, the Design Decision Forum. I'll also be talking about my progress with the novel and an alpha reading, general progress on basically where I'm at in the project, the development diary, and feedback that I've been receiving, sort of extending something I've been talking about on the website in terms of emotion in the novel, and I might give you another extract from the novel as well. So I've left the Teonizza system, thinking ahead of, I've been looking for some wood-derived paper to print out my novel, and I've got a lead that there might be some manuscript quality paper in the Teanva system. So strap in as we travel through the Teanva system and I try and find some paper and I talk about the novel as we go. So a topic that's been brought back into the DDF and just been released to the archive is trading. For those of you who don't read the Design Decision Forum, basic rundown is talking about how trading occurs in the game. There are markets, there are the actual commodities that you trade in the markets, and there are legal goods, there are illegal goods, and where you can trade these and how much they're worth depends on where you are, how far away you go from the place that you sold it, its rarity, if it's a special kind of food, like a luxury item, and obviously you make more money, but depending obviously where you go. So it's more an in-depth version of what was already existing that should be more fun, allows more alteration, a lot less stable than the previous games. So there's a bit more risk involved in the trading. You know, you might be going to the system expecting to get a high price, but between you leaving the place and arriving at the next place, a million other ships might have arrived and saturated the market and they no longer need whatever you're supplying. So there's a bit of risk there. A new element is player-to-player trading. So basically if you're docked with another ship, two people are docked at the same market, you can do a trade. And something that sort of stood out for me there was the fact that it's live. It's not sort of a, you know, you dock and then the game kind of pauses while you do your trade. It's live. So if you're just docked in space and you're attacked, that sort of ruins the trade. You can't just sit there finishing your trade while someone's trying to blow your ship up. So it's just a small thing, but it just sort of adds that realism for me. And, you know, that kind of stood out for me as being quite important. It's interesting. It doesn't really mention money in the player-to-player trading. It talks about both sides must accept the trade, but is that going to be credits or is it, you know, cargo? Can you barter? It looks like I think you can barter, you know, perhaps, you know, I'll trade you my one ton of robots for one ton of computers plus 30 credits. And that could be quite useful. And if you've got, you know, previously they've talked about working in teams. So if you've got an alliance of people, you know, these people might work the east and these people might work the west, and maybe you'll meet in the middle and just do a bit of an exchange and say you're having to go from A to C, you just go from A to B, your mate comes from C to B, you meet, you exchange and you go back your own ways. You know, there might be some value in that. So there's, you know, definitely some things in here that you know, allow for a bit of fun, I think, and making things a bit more interesting. With the smugglers topic that was mentioned, there are going to be those underground traders. Obviously, they're only going to be interested in certain commodities, but that's going to add a different level to it as well. And in pirate bases, if it's even just normal stuff, if it's too hot for you to go to a regular marketplace, at least you can go to a pirate base and sell it, though you'll probably get a low value for it, but you can still make things work. So overall, it looks pretty interesting. Shields is a topic that's just been finalised as well, and there's some very interesting things saying there. In the original Elite, you had your fore shields and your aft shields, and then in Frontier and First Encounters, you basically one shield generator covered the whole ship, and the more shield generators you had, the stronger it was, which is, we're talking science fiction here, but in my mind, it was never realistic. So it's gone back to a one or two zones of a ship, so one shield unit looks after one area, another shield generator looks after another area. Of course, the bigger the ship, the more shield zones, the more shield generators. An interesting thing here is two small shield generators are less efficient than one single large shield generator module. And if you put on too many shield generators, they don't necessarily add value, they add redundancy. So when one fails, and the other one might kick in. So that's a little bit different. And nothing in the previous games was really dealt to how the shield generators work in the real world. But they obviously have a power draw, and they create heat. And heat on a ship is something that I've talked about before in my newsletters and in the podcasts. You know, trying to get rid of that heat that you produce. Luckily, the vacuum is quite cold and you've got a heat sink ready for you, but it's still something you have to deal with. Bringing out your own heat sinks and heat exchangers to get rid of the heat being built up by your shield generators while in the middle of battle, it's obviously quite dangerous because you can lose them and it makes your ship weaker. But of course, if you're in battle for too long and your shields are under too much strain, then you might have to. So there might be a sense of, you know, wearing them down. If you can't take them out properly, just keep them in the battle for long enough, and maybe they'll overheat and explode, or overheat and open up the heat sinks, which you can destroy, and then, you know, by consequence, you'll win. So there's, yeah, I think this is quite exciting actually. Now, a lot of players of Elite have played X-Wing TIE Fighter and the other games like that, and anyone who's done that has more than likely taken down a Star Destroyer by knocking out its shield generators. There's, I don't know if there's any feeling greater than knocking out the shield generators off a Star Destroyer. Obviously, in this game, by the sounds of it, you still have to knock the shields out before you can take down the shield generators themselves, which obviously makes sense. But I like the fact that you can actually target specific parts of the ship. And if you want to disable it, you can knock out the engines and then capture it, perhaps. Don't know, just thinking, but targeting shield generators and knocking them out, and then it's more likely the person's going to surrender if you've knocked out their shield generators completely. Yeah, so once again, Frontier have taken what they used to have and expanded it and added more tactical choices into the game. So you're not just flying a basic ship anymore, you've actually got to make all these decisions on the fly. A few more things to worry about, which is just pretty cool. Right then, so I guess the big news really for the novel is that I've finished this edit now. My original plan was to finish it 31st July. That didn't happen. I put the finishing date back out to the 15th of August, and I managed to peel it back, and I finished around the 8th of August, so it was really exciting. And so I sent the manuscript out to all my alpha readers, and I'm already getting feedback. It's fantastic. One person just picked it up and couldn't put it down and just read it straight through in one day. Another guy sort of finished it in 3 days. I think that's really fantastic. You know, words like page turner came up, you know, unputdownable. They were really, really enjoying it. Yeah, it's fantastic to hear those things. And obviously they've got some good constructive criticism as well. Unfortunately, there was more typos in there than I really sort of thought there would be. It gets hard when you've stared at the same book over and over and over again. You're not really, when I'm reading it and proofreading it, I'm just seeing the words in my head and not seeing the words on the page. So it makes it hard to pick up some of the stupid things. You know, a guy got shot and he had a lot of paint in his back instead of pain. Apologies to all my readers for things like that, but I do appreciate you picking them up. Your eyes are fresh, and that's what they're there for. So I'm going to take account of all those things and fix them all up. And that's going to make it obviously a lot cleaner read. And then I can go in and I can and do some more work on it. And so, yeah, so I've probably got about 4 or 5... probably half a dozen actually, people come back with some feedback. You know, everyone's enjoyed it, but there's some things that, you know, upset some people, and those things don't upset other people, but they have a few other things. So it's really interesting sort of getting, you know, all these different opinions coming in now, and everyone's got their pet peeves perhaps, some things that I'm aware of, and I hope to sort of pick them up, but I didn't get all of them. For example, just like word choice, or using the same word too often, you know, on the same page perhaps, yeah, those kind of things tend to stick out in a reader's mind. I know I have a problem with that. And I thought that I would have got rid of all those, but some of them are still stuck in there, and some people have upset those. One thing that did come up was not explaining some things enough, like terminologies from the novel that I didn't go into detail. So I've used apostrophe, C-R-E-T-E, Crete, quite a few times. I mean, that's been done, I think, a little bit in science fiction, and I sort of hope that that was kind of obvious what I'm talking about. You've got an apostrophe, which means you've obviously cut some letters out, and I finish with the word Crete. There's not many words that have Crete as the second part of a word. In terms of context, I was kind of hoping that people would put two and two together there. Not everyone has, so I have to come back and question myself, okay, am I asking too much of the reader here? Do I need to put a bit more detail in there? Do I need to complete that word? Obviously, I'm going for concrete, but concrete is such a 20th century word. I'm looking for a 34th century word here, and I could come up with a futuristic word in front of Crete, which has also been done in other science fiction, but didn't really want to go down that road. That kind of almost felt a bit cliché-ish for me. I was trying to avoid that with this little shortcut. I wait for more opinions to come and see how many people that kind of thing bothers. Another example is the weapon of choice, the protagonist, is a cult diplomat. I like to use words like diplomat and peacemaker and things like that for weapons, for guns. It's a bit silly, perhaps, but you know, if I've got the word cult in there, I'd like to think that people go, oh yeah, well it's a manufacturer of a gun. It's a gun called diplomat that's either really corny or that's really cool. Hopefully I'd like to think you could pick up that that's a weapon. But again, I'm a person who does a lot of research on weapons. I know what cults are. Not everyone's going to be a gun nut. So perhaps, again, I'm asking too much of the audience. So this is great that people give me this feedback, and I can ascertain, well, you know, most people pick it up, some people don't. Should I put some more detail in there? And that's really my job in the coming edits to really figure that out. So thanks for all the feedback so far. Keep it coming. Give me everything you got. The more I've got, the better I can work through it. All right. Here's my contact, actually. He's just on the link. Hang on. Hi, excuse me. We talked over the bulletin board. I'm looking for the paper.
Paper, you say? From a tree, you say? Yeah. Now that you mention it, I think I do remember hearing something about that. Yeah, there's this bloke in a Lacon Mark IV. Usually find him around the inner systems. I think he was selling some a while back.
So, you've got nothing for me then. Great. Well, thanks for your time. I'll keep on heading insistently. Okay, so with the novel with the Alpha Readers, I'm taking a self-enforced break from the novel. That's actually a lot harder than it sounds. This is my baby that I've been working on for 8 months now, and I actually want to get back into it and keep working on it. The next step in my plan was to print it out, and I've got 5 colour lighters and a red pen to underline, and I've got a plan on, you know, going through this and editing it. I've got to tell myself, no, stop. I'm going to wait for the Alpha Reader feedback. I'm going to type it up on the computer, then I'm going to print it out, and then get on to my next edit. So while I'm not writing, I have to do other things. And perhaps it's good timing, started a new job, it's been extremely busy, not having any lunch breaks, doing a bit of work at night, so I haven't really had a lot of time to do much. However, I'm working on the podcast. Sunday night, recording the podcast, started working on the next newsletter, and so it's going to be the August newsletter, it'll be coming out the next week or two, and working on this flash fiction course, so I'm definitely keeping busy, there's a lot of things going on. Had an open home today for the house. 11 groups came through, 2 of them serious, so that's really pretty positive. It's incredibly difficult to keep a house perfectly clean with 2 crazy kids. They've been going off to their grandfathers this week while we've been working, so that's fantastic. That sort of keeps me out of the house for the majority of the time. The new au pair is going to be starting in a week, so that means they'll be staying back at home again, so it's going to be a nightmare. So really we just need to sell this house as quickly as possible. That's what's been taking up the time, aside from the writing. Right, there's a ship out there in the scanner. This could be my guy. And I'll just call him up on the link again. Hi. I was told someone out here would have some print quality paper on hand.
Yes, sir. 200 GSM. Bleached white. As pretty as perfection. 1 imperial ton of the stuff. But I just sold it to another gentleman. An Englishman, if I'm not mistaken. He kept on going on about German cars. Strange fellow. But he was quite adamant he wanted that paper. He said he had unfinished business. Planet side.
Planet side, you say? All right, well, I guess I'll head back in system then. Thanks. So a couple of weeks ago, David Braben did another development diary, put that on YouTube, and in that David discusses a new type of ship, new for the game, passenger ships, and how you take passengers on board your spaceship, and he answers a few questions from some guys in the forums. Now, I really love, you know, so far everything that was in Frontier and First Encounters. It's been taken, pulled apart to its constituents, and it's been expanded and grown, and you know, narrative has been added to it, leading to a lot of variations. And in this case, it's passengers. You know, before you remove 5 ton of cargo space from your ship, you're chucked in a compartment for a person to live in. You know, very coach class. Not really what dignitaries or anyone of any special level would go into. Now we have passenger liners and yachts. We have a little bit of class. You might be taking some high class people on it, and from that you can get some story and some narrative and some interaction with other players. Player A might have been given a contract to murder this official. Player B might have been given a contract to ferry official from A to B. Who's going to win? Who's going to get their contract fulfilled and who's not? And who's going to carry a bit of a grudge because they fail? So player A might get his group to take on player B's group, and there might be battles, and player C might come along and in the middle of this battle and he might be able to pick a side, and all these things could happen in this universe that couldn't have happened in First Encounters. So I think this is bloody fantastic. Another thing that David Braben talked about, sort of answering questions, was the entry into the game and the learning curve. Now, I'm not a big MMO guy. I haven't really played many of them at all, but sort of a common factor of all of them was that you started in an easy area of the world that you can explore. You've got limited equipment, limited people to interact to, all the bad guys are easy. There's not a heck of a lot to discover. And so you earn a few experience points and you get more equipment, and then you move out of that area into the next area. And there's more things to look at. There's harder people to attack. They have more money and better equipment to get as a result of defeating them. The quests become harder. And so you grow with the game. So there's not like there's a hard learning curve. The learning curve grows with you. It's kind of like a continuously variable transmission. As you go faster, the transmission ratio changes. And sorry, that's the engineer coming in again, but it's one-to-one, almost, in that the game grows with you, so it's not hard to get into it, yet by the time you're finished, the game that you've played is such a wide, you know, exciting game that's nothing like the game that you started with. And something that Elite Dangerous has different is that they're going to be continually updating and evolving this galaxy. So even those that have, you know, started the game and moved on and become Elite, things are still going to be changing, and there's going to be new things to do. And the, I guess, sort of 2 years down the line, game that people are playing is going to be nothing like the game that they started with. I think that's really, really exciting. All right, well, I'm in orbit over the planet now. Might just radio down to the starport. Hello. Yes. This might be a weird question, but have you seen anyone carrying around a bunch of paper?
About German cars and carrying paper around. I think he may have been here yesterday, but he took a shuttle up to the orbital trading post. Something about showing something to the station commander.
The orbital post. I'm starting to see a bit of a trend here, but thanks for your help. Okay, I'll just turn back to the orbital trading post and dock there. Let's get out of here. Station commander, I've got to go find the station commander. Well, on the way there, I might just give you guys a bit of an extract from the novel. I've had to remove a bit and play with it because I didn't want to have too many spoilers. There's not really a heck of a lot happening in this particular scene. Hopefully it paints a pretty picture and you like it. Robert exited hyperspace before a distant red dwarf star. At that distance, it was barely larger than any other star. A light tint of red, perhaps, and mildly larger than the rest. There was little solar output at that range. It was a dark system, a collection of lost debris and planetoids, gathered up in some stable gravitational eddy, like a Lagrange point. Gunn's explorer shuttled in behind him, hitchhiking on his hyperspace vector. "This is it?" Gunn asked. She didn't bother to hide the scorn in her voice, the upholder of the law casting disdain on the hideout of the scum she'd spent her life destroying. "This is it?" In truth, he'd only been to Smuggler's Junction half a dozen times, but he knew it and the approach pretty well. Even if he hadn't always been the pilot. The nav computer had no data for the area, but an image slowly formed of the system. Two rogue bodies, Mars size, an asteroid belt. And if nothing had changed in the last 6 months, one particular asteroid that would welcome him home. He headed towards the belt, Gunn close on his wing. She was quiet, but not abnormally so. The silence had the feeling of her deepened concentration, analysing the place, committing every detail to memory. But he hoped also a sense of awe and enjoyment at the sight. He turned them around to approach the belt from the galactic east. The shields flared and glowed as they vaporised rock and dust. It was relatively smooth sailing for the first 10 kilometres. Then the belt thickened and the rocks grew bigger. The explorer shook and rumbled like an ultrasonic sorter, jittering at a high frequency. The shield readout dropped with each shake, sometimes by 0.5%, sometimes by 2 or 3. But Robert wasn't paying attention. He didn't care about the shields. He cared about one particular asteroid. There were thousands of them out there, some tidally locked as they orbited some invisible barycenter, others spinning in any number of axes, perfectly still or looping all around the place. There were round ones and ovals ones, big gashes in them and others that looked like miniature selenes. There, he saw it, a kidney-shaped rock that looked like a giant space monster had taken a bite out of it. Totally plain, absolutely nothing abnormal about it in any way, but completely obvious if you were looking for it. It rotated around a single axis, and Robert watched its slow, painful revolution about its long axis, then looked along the direction the bite was facing. He corrected the explorer to match. The shields dropped to 65%. Gunn weaved and threaded her way through behind him, but he'd probably do himself more harm if he tried that. Blunt and brutal was the way forward. A life motto, perhaps. He found the next marker, an asteroid with a circumferential valley running along the equator. Man-made, but not obviously artificial on first inspection. Its north pole pointed the way forward. He found the third and fourth markers, and then he was there.
"Yes, sir. Whatever you say, sir. Right away, sir. I'll get the stevedores working overtime. Yes, sir. The docking tube will be working again."
Okay, this looks like the station commander's office. Hello. Excuse me. Is this the station commander's office? I'm looking for a man with a lot of paper. Okay, I'm looking for a man holding a lot of paper in one of the cafes trying to have some breakfast. Talking about a needle in a haystack. Now, something I discussed on the website a couple of weeks back was emotions and how you sort of display those in the writing, because emotion is not something you can just tell. Emotion is something you have to make the reader feel, and to do that, you need to basically have to throw a lot at the reader. And there are many ways to do that, and you should ideally do them all, depending on how important the emotion is, whether you just sort of attack the feeling from many angles, so you layer it again and again and again. But you also reflect the way the person's point of view sort of views the world. You know, their emotional state colours the way they look at things and how they interpret what people say. And that emotional state is, you know, can be contrasted or enhanced by how their emotions have changed throughout the novel. But what you got to be careful of is you don't pad the story. And I guess you don't want to go full-bore hyper-emotion on every single emotional point in the novel. The story rises and rises and rises towards a climax and then sort of falls away. And on that way, there's going to be peaks and troughs. And the amount of effort you put into making the reader feel an emotion has to sort of tie in with that as well. climatic emotions should be very intense. Peak ones should be intense as well, but not at the same sort of order as the climax or the first or the second plot points. And the ones in the troughs perhaps shouldn't be as high as well. But, you know, it could happen the inverse. When you've got that trough in the action, that's when you've got that time to sort of pause and reflect and think about the cock-ups and the failures and what's going to happen next. So you've got to make it tie in with a novel, you know, in the middle of a chase scene. It's not the time to really, you know, let's talk about our feelings while we're being shot at. That's not going to work. You don't have time to think about things. That's like the appropriate time where you want to get on with the story. So you can just sort of just flat out say what was going on, what one emotional hit's enough. And then later, once you've escaped, you're trying to get your heart rate back down to normal, that's when you can really think about how scared you were and, you know, how close you were to dying and how that made you feel, if that's appropriate. Yeah, you make sure you don't want to pad it out. And that's sort of the worry. If you put too much in, it might sort of read that you're padding it. You got to really think about how much detail you put into it. You don't want to be too consistently doing the same amount of emotion. The emotion has to grow with the story. I think they've done that pretty reasonably well in the story, and all the feedback so far is everything's sort of bang on. People give me the feedback, and I've questioned them further. You know, what about this? What about that? Have you got any problems with that? And everything's coming back pretty damn positive. So that's really good. I think on a structural level, more feedback's coming in, obviously. But so far, I seem to have hit all the points and put together a bloody exciting novel. It's been described as Matthew Riley-esque with the action. And someone who said they've got lots of Asimovs that they haven't finished reading yet, bang, my novel got finished within the week. So it's really positive and, you know, really good feedback. And if I can take all the constructive criticism and feed that into the novel, we're going to have something that's going to be pretty damn amazing. All right, here we go. This guy having an English muffin. Stack of paper next to him. I wonder if you'll mind if I just nick a little bit. Oh! Hey, Drew!
Uplink deactivated. Signal loss confirmed. Commander's log broadcast terminated.